Hey there. This is Conscious Living. I'm Wendy Garrett. Welcome to the show. I appreciate you listening. Appreciate your time, whatever you're doing, whatever you are thinking. Thank you for giving us a chance to be a part of your day. I've got a great guest. I've actually talked to her before. Lori Toy, you may be familiar with, and you may not, but if you have heard anything about her, probably the most, I think, incredible piece of information is the MAPS. That's a variety of MAPS that really spell out, if we continue at this rate, what could happen to our Earth. The Earth changes, and that we actually have a part in that, and we might be able to redirect it. And it goes from best to worst case scenario. Okay, that's the overview. That's the short verse. Now, Lori can there's a lot more detail than that. But Lori, thank you for coming back, because at this point, you have a book called A Teacher Appears. And this really is different from the other books, because this takes you us back to when this all first started and gives a even better idea of what got you on this path. And that really, I think, is fundamental to this whole thing. It's a key. So welcome back. And I'm glad you're just, you know, going forward with this, because I think people really need to hear it and give them a different perspective of what we might be able to shift with our own thoughts.
Yes. And thank you, Wendy, for having me back. It's always a pleasure to speak with you. A Teacher Appears is a new book, of course, that I've published, which is an introduction to the Ascended Masters of the I'm America teachings. But this is a very, very unique book. And the reason why it is, Wendy, is when I originally published the I'm America maps, we felt such a calling to share the Earth Changes material that in all of the beginning work that I had previously published, we focused primarily upon that message. We just felt like that was important. We felt that there was a need to get that out as soon as possible. And so the original seminal teachings, which were more of the spiritual side of the material and an introduction to how I began to channel, how I opened up to spiritual teachers, and just the whole trial and tribulation that we went through in actually publishing the first map, which was the I'm America map, which is an Earth Changes map of the United States, just the whole process that we went through in order to share that information with humanity.
Okay, and I'm sorry for making you reiterate your story, but there are going to be people right now listening who have not heard all of this or any of it. And so what happened? What was the deal? Why did you change your life?
Oh, my gosh. You have to understand, Wendy, that I was from an extremely conventional background. I was raised in the Missouri Synod Lutheran Church. I had never heard about channeling. I might have understood a little about meditation, but had never actually done meditation. I didn't know what a past life was. I hadn't been involved in anything of metaphysical understanding whatsoever. So I was 22 years old, and I was living in a small town on the Olympic Peninsula, which is near Seattle, Washington, called Squim. And I was the manager of a small weekly newspaper for the advertising department. And I had been called out to pick up an ad from a health food store. So I went to the store, walked in the door, and the woman at the counter pointed her finger at me and said, "You have work to do for Master Saint Germain." And I was a bit surprised by that, and of course I was intrigued, but I needed to pick up the ad, so I said, "Okay, who is Master Saint Germain?" She says, "I'd like to show you his picture." So I followed her to her back office, and there on the wall hung a picture of the Comte de Saint Germain, and it was odd, Wendy, because it was like I recognized this person, even though there wasn't any reason for me to recognize him, because it was obviously, you know, from another time period around the French Revolution. And so he was not a contemporary whatsoever. And I asked her, I said, "Well, tell me more about who this person is," because it was such a visceral reaction on my part. And she said, "He is an ascended master." And I said, "Who is an ascended master?" And then she went on to explain to me that an ascended master is a being who was a person, just like you or I, and what they have done is they have gone through a spiritual process where they have, I guess in Hindu terms, liberated from the need to be in a physical body. And so instead of just going on into the higher dimensions of spiritual development, they also have made a pledge from their ascended state of spiritual consciousness that they would protect and defend humans in terms of their spiritual needs for evolution and growth, but also to protect them against obvious assaults that would also infringe upon those needs. And this intrigued me because I had never heard of anything like this at all. So she gave me a pamphlet on Ascended Master teaching, and this woman became my first teacher of the Ascended Master tradition.
Okay. Now, I've heard references to people like immortals or avatars. And does this apply?
It does. However, the Ascended Masters are also members. Most of them are. There might be some that are not. I mean, honestly, I just work here, so I don't know everything.
Yeah, I know the feeling.
But they claim to be members of a group known as the Great White Brotherhood. The Great White Brotherhood is not a racial slur by any means. Great White Brotherhood refers to Great White Light, and it is a brotherhood and a sisterhood of these ascended beings who have joined together in their consciousness at another level in order to assist and to help us. And there can be members of the Great White Brotherhood. Many people are members who are in the unascended state as well. And they actually work together through the medium of consciousness in order to engender our spiritual growth and evolution on Earth. And it is not necessarily a religion. It embraces all religions, so it is universal in its cause and its focus.
Okay, now the thing is with this, when you get into the channeling and getting with the maps and all that, so from that point, you have been basically called.
I've been called.
Yeah.
And so what I did from that point, Wendy, is I began to practice meditation a lot, which was hard to do because I had three little kids. But I'd get them down for their naps in the afternoon, and I'd have about an hour and a half. And during that time period, that's when I would meditate. And it was so fascinating because these master teachers would often appear to me, and they would give me techniques to do, how to improve my meditation. Saint Germain, who was one of the major teachers that I worked with in those early days, would show me past lives. And not past lives in terms of you were, you know, some famous person. It wasn't like that at all. I had very nondescript lifetimes. But what he would show me is how those lifetimes actually had an effect on what I was doing today, and how every lifetime is important and has an impact on who we are in this present moment.
Let me give you an example, because I know how that one is interesting.
For instance, this is interesting. I in one of my past lives, they showed me walking on a street. I was a man. And the one thing that I always was told to do by other students of metaphysics is when you're in a regressive state is to always look at your feet, because your feet will show you a lot of where you're at in the context of that lifetime. So I looked at my feet and I immediately recognized that it was probably, had to be 16th, 17th, possibly 18th century. It was really hard to tell. I'd have to do a little more research on that, but I was a man, and I was walking down a street with two other individuals, and I was living in Portugal in that lifetime, and I was a map maker.
How did you know you were a map maker?
We went into a shop, into the shop where we worked, and we were scribing these maps, and okay. We were working, of course, and then later on I did some research, and I realized that the Portuguese, you know, were very much involved in making maps. So I did have a lifetime where I had actually scribed maps for the New World.
Okay, so thus that connects you to the Earth climate change maps for the United States.
For today. So that was one other just little piece of the puzzle. I mean, there's many, many other things. That's just one, which would probably make more sense to the listeners.
Okay, but now they probably connected the dots for you in that way.
They really did. They really did. But of course, at that time, it meant nothing to me. I had no idea what it meant, because this was early 80s, and I was just in this whole process just as you know, a individual working to grow and to evolve spiritually.
So where do the robes come in?
Excuse me?
The robed, the guides, the well, those.
What happened is shortly after that, after I started this whole process of meditation, I was awakened one night and I could smell sharp oxygen, like ozone in the room. And I thought, I must have left a window open because we had a lot of thunderstorms on the prairie where I live. And I rose up in bed and I noticed at the foot of my bed that the Master Saint Germain was standing there. And first I thought, I must still be dreaming. And so I sat up and I kind of waved my hand through the figure and the figure vanished. So I just thought, I'm just, still kind of in that state between, sleeping and waking. And I just figured, well, it's just some sort of a dream. But shortly after that appearance, I began to have a dream. And it was a vision-like dream. And in that dream, four beings in white robes presented a map of America. But this map was very different than any map I have ever seen. And it showed that the United States coastlines had drastically changed. But not only that, Wendy, I noticed that there was like an energy exuding from the map, and as if that there was this really high energy coming off of the map itself. So I was very much impressed by this experience. And I realized that this was more than a dream, that this was a vision, and maybe even perhaps more than a vision, I had been called. But I didn't even realize that, of course, at the time, as how often those experiences are.
Mm-hmm.
But I called a friend later on, and we had been part of a small spiritual and metaphysical meditation group that we had formed in the small community we were living in. And I explained to her what had happened. She says, well, these changes have long been talked about by many different traditions. And she said, but, don't focus on the fear. Focus on the fact that afterwards there is to be a golden age, a new time of high energy for humanity, where humanity will evolve and be more realized in who they are as divine beings. And at that time, too, of course, I was the mother of these three small kids, and it wasn't like something that I was going to go out and broadcast to anyone. I had just shared it with her. But later on in 1988, my life had drastically changed. I had gone through a divorce. I was now a single mother. And I was stressed out just by that whole experience. So I returned, of course, to spiritual practice and was attending a meditation class. And the meditation leader had asked each of us, to explain what we were experiencing in meditation. So I began to explain to her that when I meditate, these teachers come and that they will describe certain things for me to do or make suggestions, and they're helpful, and sometimes they leave me on my own. And she just got this very puzzled look on her face, and then a knowing came over her, and she says, you must be a channel. And I said, a channel? And I had never even heard the word channel before. I didn't know what that was. And so afterwards, a friend who had been attending the class with me, we went out to have a cup of coffee, and he said, with your susceptibility to be near these spiritual teachers, I think that she's probably right, that you would really make a great channel. And then he lent me several books on how to open up the channel and how to channel and what it was. But he also said, I'm very intrigued with your dream of the map. And, of course, he was a student of the Edgar Cayce studies, and Edgar Cayce, had a lot of his information was focused on the topic of earth changes. And he says, perhaps we could talk to these spiritual teachers about that map and maybe get some idea of just what that message is about. And so I said, okay, I'll do that. That sounds like an interesting project. But it was a bit of a struggle because we both were full-time. He had an advertising agency. I was a graphic designer. And at that time, I had my daughter with me and had to get her off to kindergarten in the morning and all that. And so we agreed to meet in the early morning hours. We met at 4:30 a.m. And through that process, Wendy, it was in the beginning sessions were very difficult, and I actually talk about all of these sessions in the Teacher Peers and just how difficult it was in the beginning, because I would enter into meditation and then I'd get there with the master teachers and they'd be talking to me really fast, but I didn't know even how to relay that information. So finally I started to communicate what they were saying back and forth, and it was a little obtuse and kind of slow, but little by little, piece by piece, step by step, they would give me visualization techniques and how to integrate the process. And in A Teacher Appears, I talk about how this happened, and it became a much more streamlined process for me. And from these sessions, then we created the I'm America map.
Okay, now part of that is you're elevating your frequency.
Absolutely. And that was a very unique experience for me because, of course, again, from this totally conventional background, I had no idea whatsoever what was really happening to me. Of course, it's the rise of the energy in the Kundalini. But I didn't know that. But they were telling that to me in these very simplistic lessons. There's 51 of them total, and A Teacher Appears. But as a result, as it is with any spiritual process, I had my doubts and I had my suspicions. And so in this book, I talk about just the whole process and what happened to me at an emotional, at a mental level, physical level, and just how I integrated and worked with this information. Of course, I end up leaving the work 3 times because I feel that the message is just way too heavy. And this isn't anything at all that I want to even be involved in. But then inevitably, I would always return back to it because it's like this, that once that spark is lit within you, you can't turn back. And they had lit the spark within me. And I was ready to grow, and I was ready to evolve. And so A Teacher Appears is that story of that I think many people go through when they start the journey of spiritual development.
Okay, now I'm going to skip around in the book and all that just because there's no time to really go into any great depth. And assume that if you are listening, you're going to get A Teacher Appears and be able to follow along and connect the dots. But in here, when you get into the, there was an earthquake and you had a date in mind. This is page 121.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Over and over again, October 17th. And I couldn't get it out of my head. So finally, I went to another channeler that I knew and asked that question of the guide that she was bringing through at the time. And you can read in the book exactly what his response was, but it did turn out that indeed October 17th was the San Francisco earthquake and in the late 80s. And that was the impetus. I think I needed that to understand how important it was that we go ahead and publish the map. And that we go ahead and share the information with as many people as we could. Now, remember, in the beginning, when we first were introduced to this type of information, we didn't understand it in its entirety. We felt like that it was more like a prediction. We didn't understand the nuance of prophecy. But what I came to understand later on is that with prophetic information, especially when it's spiritual in nature, as this is, that this is information that is not carved in stone. And this is not a doomsday message. Instead, it's information that's being given to us ahead of time so that we can make conscious changes now and be informed and aware of what the possibilities and the probabilities could be with this type of information.
See, that's what I think is so powerful, is that people, they desperately want a concrete, this is what's going to happen, blah, and that isn't the way it works. We are all co-creating at the same time, and we have the ability to upgrade at any point or downgrade because of what we are adding to the equation. And I think that's really the powerful part of this message, is that no matter what information you're presenting, this is something that's a work in progress.
It is always a work in progress, and I think it's because our Western culture is very black and white. We don't easily and readily embrace metaphysic tenets. However, in Eastern cultures, and I would include the Native American indigenous cultures with that, the more traditional cultures, to them, prophecy is just a normal everyday part of their life. They recognize the role as the prophet as playing this very important role in their group. And the prophet always kind of has their finger right on the pulse of the collective consciousness. So they always understand and know what the possibilities and the probabilities are. And then the group then can take whatever action is necessary to ameliorate or help to heal that possibility and probability. But of course, we coming from this more traditional Western culture, we did not understand that. And so we sort of get obsessed with the idea that it's a false prophecy if it doesn't come true, which that's not what it is at all. In fact, I see it more as a diagnosis, as the ability to heal and to make a change now. But we, of course, nailed the masters over and over and over again, and we'd ask them for dates. And they would just like never come out with anything that made any sense to us. But finally, and then a teacher appears, they're very clear, and they talked about you have to understand reference points. And, of course, we had no idea what in the world are they talking about. So I looked at the word reference point, and this is what it is. It's a position in the landscape of the ever-present now where one can evaluate or weigh probability. So what that means is that a reference point is placed so we can initiate comparison between the actual events, prophesied events, and the possibility of their timing. And they actually did give us some reference points, things that they felt that we should look for to warn us if we were entering into a perilous time of change. And these things, I think, are really important to share with listeners. The first thing that they said would happen is that the United States economy would take a downturn. And then that economic downturn would spread and be a worldwide economic downturn. Then they said the second thing to look for would be overall global warming. And so those are two things that we're actually seeing right now and experiencing right now. Then they said we could experience worldwide earthquakes. That'd be the third thing. And this would happen through two possibilities, either an impact from a meteor or from the excess weight of the water on the tectonic plate system. So either way, that third probability possibility is yet to emerge. But we are seeing two of those reference points, and we're living them today. So this has been another reason why I decided that I wanted to share A Teacher Appears, because I feel that the more spiritual information that we have at this time arms us, this is our preparedness for what may lie ahead, and how we can possibly ameliorate, change these things, or remove fear of these events and realize that if we are to encounter these within our lifetime, these horrific changes, that at least then we will have the necessary spiritual armor, as the masters would call it, within us to deal with whatever happens.
The one thing I think about the earthquake thing is they didn't throw in the fracking potential.
It's always fascinating to me, because when they'll talk about these types of prophecies and then their spiritual lessons and all, it takes us a long time to absorb them, to understand what they're really talking about. And even today, Wendy, I'll read even one of the first or second lesson from A Teacher Appears, and my mouth will drop open because I'll realize something else that they were really saying.
Well, so, and it came through you, and so it's not in your vocabulary or in your reference. This is something that's totally foreign, so you do have to go back and say, okay, now what was this?
Yes, and I don't think people really understand that. I think that they probably think that when you channel something, receive it in trance like this, that you already know it and you already spoke it, so therefore it was cognized and you've already applied your critical thinking. But no, not at all. Instead, it's almost the opposite.
Yeah, if you want it to come through without any kind of agenda, you have to become totally, completely neutral. Otherwise, you taint it.
And not only that, you just don't even, in the technique that I use, I don't remember 80% of what is said. I'll have a faint memory, almost like I've been in a dream state, would be the best way to understand it. And my method is I'm clairaudient trance channel. So I go into a light trance. I don't allow ever the spiritual teacher to completely take my body over. There's some channels that do that, and they're very, very good at that, but that's not my forte. And then what I do from that is that we record the sessions, and we make transcripts of them, and then we go through an editing process, and that's how the books, of course, are created.
I want to talk about the thing you have right now on lauritoy.org. You actually have a book, an audio book people can tap into and listen, stream if they want. But we're going to talk about that in the next segment here, okay? In the meantime, though, if you're following along, the book is A Teacher Appears. This is the introduction to the Ascended Masters of the I Am America teachings, okay? We finally have that building block around which everything else is centered on conscious living.
I'm home. And I love it. I'm home where I belong. I'm home and I love it. I'm home where I belong.
It's always nice to come home, but these days, many Americans are at risk of foreclosure and losing their homes. Fortunately, help is available. Making Home Affordable is a free program from the U.S. government that has already helped over a million struggling homeowners, and we want to help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
And I love it. I'm home.
I'm home.
Find out now what your options are. Go to makinghomeaffordable.gov or call 1-888-995-HOPE. The sooner you act, the better chance we can help you.
I'm home.
I'm home.
Where I've been.
Brought to you by the U.S. Treasury, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg.
Ha ha, I win. Whoa! Ah!
Sassy! Johnny fell down the well.
I'm wet.
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl. What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold.
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound, health, and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Hello. Welcome back. A Teacher Appears. My guest, Lori Toy. She's the author of the book, and she's also the creator of the I Am America maps. If you've had a chance to see them, it shows how the coming Earth changes could potentially affect us. There are several different versions with golden cities on them. And those are cities of illumination, the cities where people will have certain abilities and they're called together to basically work in a concentrated effort on manifesting those. Is that a good way to put that? Or
very good. Yes. In fact, it was so fascinating, Wendy, because when we received all the Earth Changes material, remember when I said that there was that energy exuding from that map in the vision dream, what the spiritual teachers explained is that there were these areas on the earth that would manifest before and during this time of great change. In fact, they're present now, so anyone can travel to them and access them now and work with them. But they are prophesied safe havens. for interaction with spiritual energy. And what they are these vortices. They're known as Golden City Vortices or Golden City Vortex. Areas, they're over 200 miles across. And they resemble, if you were to look at them from above in a plain view, they look like a large Maltese cross. But they contain within them a sacred geometry. And that sacred geometry can be accessed by us. They interact with Mother Earth alongside with their stewards of different ascended master teachers. And they are places where we can accelerate our spiritual growth and development during this time of great change. They call this instigating and fostering the ascension process, our own ascension process, so that we can move on to a different plane of understanding and actually liberate from this plane if we so choose. Now, the ascension process, of course, is something that maybe for some would happen very instantaneously and go very quickly for them. But for most of us, it is something that starts in a lifetime and continues through many other lifetimes. But what the Golden City vortices are claimed to help do is that they help us to accelerate that growth and actually also help the Earth at this most critical time, because the prayers and the meditation and any kind of spiritual technique or practice that we would use in a Golden City is alleged to amplify in its effect for the world. So these are critical points.
So if I were called, after listening to you, to go to such a space and practice my ascension, work on my ascension, improve my ascension, devote myself to ascension, where would I go?
Well, there's five areas in the United States. So there, it seems, and it's really fascinating because they're, none of them are really located on coastal areas, but they're located, you know, just enough inland that anyone can get to them quite readily and easily. But the first one is in Arizona, New Mexico. The second one is in Indiana and Illinois. The third one is in South Carolina and Georgia. The fourth one is in Idaho and Montana. And then the fifth one is primarily over Colorado, but also embraces some areas of Nebraska and Kansas. There are also more of these throughout the world. And as we were more educated in this whole process of what they are and what they're about, we received a world map from the master teachers, and there are 51 of these total throughout the whole world. And of course, 51 is the Mayan number of completion.
Okay, and that calendar is available, or that, I'm sorry, that map is available?
It will be available. We're in process of reprinting the Freedom Star World map right now. And so people can go to my website, and it should be available in the next couple of weeks.
How has that changed from the time that you initially put this all together?
Well, in 1997, we asked that exact same question to the master teachers because, of course, the I'm America map came out, and you know, its original genesis was 1988. We published it in 1989, so we felt, well, that was a reading of the collective consciousness then. How do we work with this? And I think they were a bit amused when we asked that question, because to them, how do you change a prophecy? To them, it was this valuable story that they were telling us that we needed to work on in order to help to change, and that this wasn't a prediction. But what they did for us, Wendy, is they presented the six map scenario, which actually depicts how the Earth could possibly change, and they used the United States as the model. So these are United States maps. And so they have the first case scenario, which is really quite mild and more generalized, all the way to what they say is a six map, which is the I Am America map, which is the final conclusion or worst case scenario. So they say that basically our consciousness is working with nature and the elemental kingdoms, the divas, all the time to actually change and create the world that we are living in. So we are in essence like stewards of nature, and consciousness does have this very profound effect upon weather and what is happening, you know, in terms of the whole global scene.
Well, and if you pay attention and you look for your own signs, your own connection with spirit, it was interesting this morning. I was writing and getting prepared for this, and they said, okay, now take a break and go, you know, go out and take a walk. And so I walked out in the backyard, and there was this wonderful little garden snake in the backyard. Now, how many times I've gone out there and haven't seen the snake, nothing, but this morning happened to be the moment when the two of us had our little encounter. And he didn't run away. I quickly redirected the energy of the dog so the dog wouldn't come over and have a, you know, a festival. And so, that, you know, but I go back over and the snake is turned around just waiting for me to look. And part of that is, you know, Kundalini energy is powerful. Snake is also serpent wisdom. It's also divine esoteric transformation, because you are transmuting a lot of things and then transcending as you shed the skin to become a greater and more potent, powerful, in-tuned, connected creator. To me, that was symbolic of everything that's going on in this moment, saying that we are learning how to basically get out of that physical form and become a higher embodied being. That's what you're teaching with all of the great masters.
Yes.
Gives people a tool to do.
And so powerful, too, that you saw that snake, because it's also representative of the energy of the Earth Mother. The Golden Cities are really known, as we've come to understand them, they are the Western Shambhala tradition. In Buddhism, of course, they talk about this mystical city of Shambhala that was once existed on Earth. It was a perfect city. It was a place where the immortals resided. It was a place you could go and actually receive instruction. And this, of course, is embedded in the provenance of all ascended master tradition. Of course, Shambhala in the Western tradition is a little bit different. And these golden cities, actually, their energy stream from this ethereal city, and they are archetypes of this same energy, but it's duplicating 51 times now upon the Earth, so that we have more energy at this time as we move into a golden age, so that we humans can shed that skin, as you were talking about, and transcend and move not only into fourth dimensional consciousness, but onward into fifth dimensional being and conscious expression. That is the overall goal that I see is happening, not only through the Earth changes, but through this recalibration of the Earth that is happening not only through the Golden Cities, but also through energies that are coming to us right now from the galactic center, or the great central sun.
They give you practices. The violet flame is one of them.
Yes, and in A Teacher Appears, they introduced the violet flame, which was very profound at that time in my life. I was using the violet flame, of course, on a daily basis. I had to. Trust me, I needed it. And and the violet flame is, of anything, if you were to pick up in these teachings, and it's in most Ascended Master teachings, you'll find it everywhere. It's quite common. It is also, in Hinduism, it would be known as Bhakti Yoga, or the Yoga of Compassion, or the practice of compassion, which we find in Christianity. We find it in Hinduism. We find it in Buddhism. And but they talk about it more from their tradition as light and sound. Light and sound is always the foundation of most Ascended Master tradition. And it's based upon the seven rays of light and sound. And ray forces, of course, are very seminal in their teachings as well. But the rays, you'll find, are really the seven planets that are talked about in traditional Vedic astrology, or the seven grahas, the grabbers of our consciousness. So these perceptible energies that then express themselves as light and sound become very important, because it's best too, when you're learning about the rays, to throw away the numbering systems, because that can really throw you off. But the last and final ray force, which is known as the violet ray, is the last energy and light spectrum from where we can transconduct to the next octave. So they visualize and teach us how to use the violet flame through sound, through decree, through prayer, through meditation, through visualization, to actually visualize this magnificent purple light around us. And from that position, we're able to transconduct our consciousness to a new level of expression where we can actually experience fourth dimension.
Now, when you have done this, beyond these teachings and beyond everything that you are disclosing now, personally, what is it like for you now?
Oh, it's wonderful. It always brings me peace. That's the first thing. Of course, it will depend on what I'm focusing upon in the moment. If it's a personal issue, if it's a work issue, you know, for whatever you need to do it, or if it's just, you know, overall spiritual maintenance on a daily basis. For me, what I've noticed most with using violet flame and working with the violet ray is that I invoke the energy not only of the spiritual teachers to help and assist my own ascension process, but it also, for me, and I'm sure it's different for everyone, depending on what they're using it for, I get this sense of detachment where whatever is worrying me in the moment or I'm emotional about or whatever it is, you know, whatever spiritual problem I might be dealing with, it allows me to detach, and then I get perspective on that. But I also notice one other thing, and this is a physical anomaly. I always get a very high-pitched ring.
Yeah.
And that high-pitched ring, I think, is me tuning into those other frequencies that then subtly are helping me to grow and evolve in my ascension process.
You know what? What I've been told about that sound is eventually it'll go away and you'll know your work is completed, but don't expect it to happen anytime in this lifetime.
Well, I get it a lot, so that sort of shows where I'm at.
It's like, okay, don't go jumping for joy just yet, because you got another hurdle to clear, and this noise is just part of it. So, but it's that thing of becoming more, I think, accepting and allowing that we're evolving, and this is part of our learning to work as co-creators and not just see ourselves as little teeny tiny islands with no power. If the very first thing you can do is say that I am creating, and then see what it's you're creating.
It is truly part of the self-realization process, which in a teacher appears, they're instigating this, they're working to see this very seminal and foundational idea. Another thing I really loved about a teacher appearance is because it's there's such an innocence in these beginning days when I began this work, and the master teachers, of course, are just educating us about really foundational things like the I am, the presence of God, and what that is, and how you can distinguish between what is the I am presence, your own individualized presence, a spirit guide, and then a master teacher. Just really basic things that you wouldn't normally think about, and then how to constantly keep yourself in tune with that presence, how to work with that presence of God through your intuition, to realize that inevitably all answers, critical answers, are within. Now, what's fascinating to me is that part of the struggle that my spiritual partner was going through at the time, and a teacher appears, Dan, is that he had these finance issues and money problems, and I think because he was sort of a newbie to spiritual growth and evolution, I think he kind of expected that the master teachers were just going to reach right in and you know, deposit money into his checking account. And that's not the way it works.
I think we'd all like that.
We would love
like,
that.
Okay,
we would, of course. We'd love to have someone do our heavy lifting for us. But what they do, you know, a master teacher like this, they will never, ever tell you what to do. Instead, they will make suggestions. Or they'll teach you the universal principles and the universal laws so that you can apply them in a way that makes sense for your personal situation. And it's humorous, but it's also, I have compassion for him too. But he was in this process, and here the master teachers keep saying to him, this is what you need to do, but he sort of resisted that. And I think that that's real typical of all of us, that when we get into this process where we realize this is the answer, and it's within us, and we ourselves must change in order to transform to new circumstances and situations. We resist that, and so this is the story also of that resistance.
What I think is really
things
cute.
Things just didn't happen immediately.
No, it's this thing of, okay, show me the money, and I'll make a change. Show me the money, and I'll make a change. Okay, like, that's Bass Ackward.
It really is, because
make a change, and then you get the result.
They're working to show us the power within us, that innate divinity as a co-creator that is within us, that we can work with these universal laws, which is the God source within, and how to actually activate our hearts and to become motivated from our hearts, and which later on, of course, now they're discovering through the Heart Brain Institute that there are actually these cells in the heart that they work just like a brain. And so I realize now that the master teachers are talking about how we activate the heart brain to begin to make our decisions and how we begin to then, you know, make our choices, our actions.
Now in the 47, love is emotion, energy, and heart. Let your heart be your guide. You talk about some of that, the heart information.
Yes. My spiritual partner, Dan, of course, became so fascinated. He got kind of caught up more in the paranormal aspect of it, where I was more into the philosophic side of it. And he was fascinated with channels. And our whole journey, as we set out, you know, we loaded 500 of these maps in the back of my car, drove down to California, went on this tour throughout part of the Pacific Northwest, on down to California, into Arizona, sleeping on living room couches, sharing and giving this presentation, you know, with people. He was always sort of a connoisseur of channels, and so he wanted to be with more channels and experience their energies and their nuances. He was just fascinated by this whole phenomenon. And what happened is he met another channel, and he decided that he would prefer to work with her than with me. And that was the end of this little journey of a teacher appears.
And I think that was the transcendent beyond the crutch for you.
It was, because then of course it paves the pathway for my second book, which is coming out next year, which is Sisters of the Flame. Of course, I was a bit saddened and bereft in the end, because, you know, a channel, they need to work with a person, and they're known as a sitter. And of course they ask those very important questions, but we were also involved in a personal relationship. So he was this great love of my life at that time. And so here he was working with another person who was channeling Saint Germain. And so what I did at that point in my life is I began to work with a group of women. And it was very empowering for me, because then I got in touch with the feminine. So it was this whole evolution that was happening to me personally alongside these amazing lessons from these spiritual teachers.
Well, and you do, in the book, it's talking about, before you do this violet flame and some of these really intense, basically energetic shifts, be sure and clean up that heart chakra. Get that in order. Because I tell you what, if you try and hurry this stuff, it can really mess with you energetically. So there's a reason for the process to be just gentle and fluid and consistent, without saying, okay, I'm going to jump into the deep end of the pool. Because having had conversations with people who had a full-blown Kundalini awakening and like, oh my, holy cow, to
it
the one that I've experienced,
and
which is ongoing.
That's really good that you've reminded the listeners of that, because no doubt this takes time. And it's like, you know, you're not going to, when you start to run, you're not going to run the Boston Marathon, you know, overnight. So this is sort of the same thing. It does take time. In the beginning, when I was starting to channel, I didn't realize that I would work with the energy of the people who were sitting. But when I evolved my work into Sisters of the Flame, I worked with a generator, and she was amazing. And she would just sit there and feed me energy while I was in trance. And this allowed me to extend the length of my trance sessions, and I suffered no burnout whatsoever. It was very, very phenomenal. And since then, that's the way that true trance channels will always work. They know how to feed off of the energy of the people that are sitting.
That's a really good point, because in terms of getting this energy, it's a very different type of energy than going out and running a physical thing. It's almost an electrical component. Well, it is an bioelectric component of us that we don't use on a regular basis. And you have to acclimate to that. Now, as you have done this with, do you do more presentations, or is it mostly like this, the internet appearance?
Well, I don't do as much trance work as I did. Of course, now you know, I'm now a grandmother, and I want to share this information with future generations. So I've been focusing on getting all of the material produced, that is, add-in books, audiobooks, available in whatever forms and ebooks, so that people will have these teachings. Because I feel that they're very important, and there's a lot there. I'm a very prolific channel. I'm one of those channels that I could work for 2 weeks and produce 2 books.
I know. Yeah.
So I backed away. I backed away just because I want to understand it. I'm unique in this aspect, is that I want to live my work, and so I want to understand it, and I want to apply it myself. And
well,
so
part of that
takes time.
Like the Edgar Cayce thing, is you will burn out. You have to give yourself a boundary and an acknowledgement that this is a life that you get to enjoy. You know, this is
exactly
that's what it's about.
And there's a lot of maintenance that needs to happen when you're doing that type of work, because it's very hard on your electrical system. In fact, I was speaking to a teacher of Taoism, and she said, you know, there are in Tibetan Buddhism, they train young boys actually who have the propensity to go into trance to do this work, but she says they don't live long. She says they usually only live, you know, to mid-20s to their 30s because they burn out.
If you're listening and you do channel and you're doing some of this, because I know a lot of the people who gravitate to this show are also along this same wavelength, remember things as innocuous as really taking a shower, getting a massage, doing kundalini exercises, kundalini yoga, or doing qigong or tai chi, those kinds of things. And if you can't do that, just take a walk and hug a tree. You know, that's an energy shift and an energy exchange that is incredibly powerful, that you don't wear out or overamp yourself into a place of being lethargic and getting an illness that you wouldn't need because it's an energetic affliction, and just saying, hey, kiddo, you're wiped out. Take a break. Because it's
exactly
so.
And one thing that
addictive.
I recommend too is just using salt baths. It's one of the most simple things you can do. Salt removes impurities. It also can neutralize energy fields. So I use a whole container, any type of salt, into a bath, and that's one way that you can instantly recalibrate your energy. And that's one method that they gave us. You also want to focus on diet to some extent. I have found that when I'm doing a lot of trance work, I crave sweets. And I think it's because you're using a lot of your brain power. And so we asked the master teachers, what should we use? And they recommended, Saint Germain recommended to use pineapple. That was a very balanced food for me specifically. Now, I'm not saying that this is for all channels, because this is a recommendation for me, but I have found that that works well for me, that I eat fresh pineapple when I'm doing that type of work, that I don't have that you know, kind of hyperglycemic craving that seems to go on.
You're using the energy. I would do an egg for protein before, quick protein, and afterwards, a cookie.
chocolate chip preferably.
No bake. Not my favorite, the chocolate, no bake, you know, peanut butter. Okay. Yeah. Cause that just had, you know, a little oatmeal, anyway, we digress to food.
Now, this is very fascinating. I had heard from a man who was very much involved in this type of study in Russia, because of course in Russia, you know, psychics and trance mediums and all that, that's part of their culture. It's much more accepted than it is here in the United States. They discovered that when people were entering into these trance sessions, that they were actually depleting aspects of the thyroid. And in order, and of course that makes sense, that's throat chakra. So in order to bring that back, they found that radish would bring the throat chakra back into balance. And so any type of radish is what I find works well. I like red ones the best, but there's white ones, there's different types that you can use, and radish is, you know, pretty common in Russia.
Yeah.
But it is, it's got... They found out that it has a type of trace substance in it that actually will replace that etheric energy that you need.
Oh, that's fascinating and very helpful. Part of this stuff is that as we share, we learn. And that's why I really, really appreciate you getting into the details and the nuts and bolts of how this manifested and the learning curve, the process of you just don't jump and, you know, you're riding the bike. You figure out what kind of bike you want and how it's going to work with you and what kind of projections you're going to throw into it.
How
so the book A Teacher Appears is great as a primer.
Well, and also, I think this is perhaps one of the reasons why I didn't publish A Teacher Appears until now, because I've been working at this now for 25 years, and I think I now have the maturity that I can share this with people and actually help them and assist them through this process for themselves.
Each person has the ability to make these wonderful, brilliant, divine connections, and that's what this demonstrates.
We do. It's all within us, Wendy. It is indeed within, as the master teachers have always said, and it is an amazing journey and one that I think their own presence would welcome them into.
Okay, listen to the audio version of this story. You can get it at loritoy.org, okay? And you can find out more. Thank you, Lori. I appreciate your time.
Yes, thank you, Wendy. It was a pleasure as always.